honorable members.
Morning.
It's a wonderful morning in Cape Town, honorable Fultan.
Right.
The proper Cape Town August weather.
Yep.
ladies and gentlemen, I am the acting chairperson. We have last week elected for the two meetings the acting chairperson. At our previous meeting last week. So we'll continue with our meetings. Apologies on behalf of the chairperson, Honorable Mjobo, Honorable Sitoli, Honorable Jafta, and Honorable Adams, as well as the Deputy Minister, Honorable Jeremy Cronin. We will continue, we will start with our meeting from the Construction Industry Development Board. I believe that you are the most important people in the construction industry. You make or break the construction industry. And I hope that you make it and not break it. There is challenges, but I hope that today we hear you surfacing above the challenges or trying to swim against the tide, Professor, and not with getting carried away with the tide. Honorable members, I think you just need some introduction. Honorable Masango has left the committee. He has been redeployed as the provincial leader of the Democratic Alliance in Mpumalanga. I believe he's been redeployed to the legislature because he can't remote control leading the province, being in Cape Town and remote control leading there. We want to wish him well in his endeavors. He didn't say anything to us, but I hope he'll still make a turn and come and say properly goodbye, Honorable Fultan. He owes us that, and he owes us the drinks as well, eh?
Soft drinks, yeah.
Like a corner provides us with soft drinks. And also, it's Women's Month, so we're continuing to forgive the excuses and the sins that the woman makes in this month. So all errors that women make, Mr. Denison, we will forgive them for that in this month. Yeah, and we'll start in the 1st of September again to say, but you've made an error. But for this month, we'll just keep quiet and walk away. Am I right? Okay, great, sir. So please, CIDB, relax. Don't be on your nerves. Please, just relax. If you are not relaxed, we will give you 1 or 2 minutes to focus quickly and be relaxed. And all we want in this committee is just for you to tell us. Don't exaggerate. If there's problems, tell us what the problem is. That's what we are here for. We are not here to nail and grind and take you to task or take you to pieces. But where you're wrong, we'll take you to task. But where we can give solid ground, upbuilding advice, not criticism, advice, we will do that. And when you also feel that we can play a bigger role, please feel free to tell us. We are here for that, because at the end of the day, your budget depends on us. And if there's a shortfall and we don't know about it, we won't be able to assist you. We won't be able to help you. So during your deliberations and during your presentation, please feel free to talk to us. Members, my name is Freddy Adams. I am a member of this committee, and I am residing, born and bred in the Western Cape. Let me start the member that has just arrived. That's the punishment for coming late into the meeting. Just introduce yourself, please.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Didi Matebe, a member of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Thomas Walters. I'm an alternate member, or new alternate member of this committee, and partly dealing with the situation that you alluded to earlier. Thanks.
Welcome, Honourable Walters. I thought you were going to join us. Honourable Walters is also from the Western. You're from the Western Cape.
Yeah, I consider myself a missionary in Gauteng, but I was born in the Western Cape as yourself.
That's good.
He's a Stormer supporter.
Wonderful. Now we talk the same language.
Good morning. My name is Ned Sultan. I'm a member of this committee. Thank you.
I'm Manuku Masihen, member of this committee in Poko Province, declared by the African National Congress. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everyone. My name is Shuaib Dinesh, and I'm the content advisor to the committee.
Good morning. It is Stephanie, researcher for the portfolio committee.
Good morning. Akula Busakwe, I'm the committee secretary.
Now, you see, we've got very important people also amongst us. These are from the gentleman with the red tie. To the lady here with the green are the bosses of the committee. They guide us. So if you want to take a chance, you have to pass them first.
Good morning, Chair, and honorable members. My name is Adam Tolkien from Department of Public Works.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, good morning. My name is Gerard Naidu. I'm from the CIDB.
Honourable Chair, honourable members, my name is Hosanna German Masele, also from the CIDB, a Stormer supporter too.
Good morning, Chair, honourable members, my name is Nkosi Vilakazi, Public Works.
Good morning, honourable Chairperson and honourable members, my name is Sam Tulakale, Public Works.
Good morning all. My name is Mohamed Henry. I'm a board member of Sanapis.
Good morning, sir. My name is Jane. I'm from Parliament Monitoring.
Good morning, sir. Members. My name is Neva Kige. I'm from the community and the infrastructure.
Good morning, sir.
My name is Paul
Lengere from the Village of
Good morning. My name is Anshan Dreyer. I'm from the DA. I'm the new member for now on this portfolio committee.
Welcome, Honourable Dreyer. As the new member on the committee, must tell the old member, the committee has just taken a decision that he must all come and host the farewell party and the drinks. It's only soft drinks, don't worry.
Mr. Chairman, maybe I just, on a note of explanation, our member James Musangu, whom I replace, is now a member of the Mpumalanga Provincial Legislature, and our other member, Kenneth Hugu, is very sick, and he won't be here for some time, and that's why we have the additional member, Thomas Walters, my colleague here, to stand in for him while he's recovering. So that's the situation from our side.
Thank you, Honourable Dreyer. I think we just need to send Honourable Momo something. While in his recovery, wish him a speedy recovery. Thank you, Honourable Dreyer. Welcome, everybody. I see that the CIDB, I don't want to fight now, but I think they still need to transform and reform. But I think the good thing that they did this morning was that they are going to be led by a woman. Am I right? And that's the good thing. The other thing, but they must appoint you now as a permanent CEO, we don't want actors. Actors are in Hollywood. The you must tell them that I must appoint you permanently, because if you need work to be done, give it to the woman. It will be done. Our men, we just let them talk. No offense, men, no offense. But just the reality. Am I right, Honorable Dreyer? Men just sit and talk, women does. They do things, they get things done.
Well, my colleague was talking to you.
So he was distracting you again. ma'am, are you leading the group? The floor is yours.
Chairperson, honourable members, as referenced, the presentation is on the National Contractor Development Programme and it's a progress update. The outline of the presentation is going to take the form of why this specific report, some background specifically on contractor development, the objectives of the National Contractor Development Programme and how it's evolved over a period of time, a whole host of stats, and then trying to sift through those stats in terms of successes and progress in terms of implementation of the National Contractor Development Program, some challenges that the industry faces, contractors face, clients face, and specifically then in terms of those challenges, what CIDB is doing in terms of interventions, and then some broad recommendations. The purpose of this report, we were requested to appraise the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Public Works with regard to the NCDP, that's the National Contractor Development Program, and in this regard to give progress in terms of how it has been incorporated specifically into local government in terms of the uptake, implementation or rollout. Also, in terms of within the family of public works, and that's why we have our principals and the public works officials also here, in terms of that specific public works department and the national and provincial levels, what's been happening. And then talk through successes and challenges, as the chairperson has mentioned, openly share these with you in terms of where we are battling as administrators to take forward certain issues, and then talk about some pipeline initiatives to address some of those challenges and our future strategy. So the background as to why must we talk about contractor development. You've heard as leaders in the industry, in terms of being the CIDB, we have a certain role to play, and many of you may know us as being extremely involved in the registration of contractors. That's one part of what we do. We regulate the industry largely, yes, but we also have a mandate to support, to facilitate, to promote development of the industry. And in doing so, if the government is spending huge amounts of budget on infrastructure delivery, we have to ensure that simultaneously we meet socio-economic objectives. And so one of the key issues in this industry is the need for transformation of this industry, and as you'll start seeing in the presentation, there has been transformation, but nowhere near the depth and pace that we'd want it or want to see it, and we need, and we are calling for in this industry and the sector specifically, radical economic transformation as well. Public Works has played a huge leadership role in the mandate of contract development over a period of time. The Department of Public Works, being the custodian of asset management and with a huge infrastructure spend, both on capital and maintenance projects, has to ensure that they meet socio-economic objectives when they spend that budget. And so the need for transformation of the industry while spending this budget was an issue that was recognized by the Minister of Public Works as far back as the initiation of CIDB in our Act. There was specific reference in our Act to promoting sustainable growth of the construction industry and increasing the participation of the emerging sector. And so in 2008, the Department of Public Works gave CIDB the mandate to go and explore coming up with a uniform policy of how contractor development should be undertaken, first and foremost in the family of public works, and then extended through government. The National Department of Public Works continues to date to play a leadership role in driving the National Contractor Development Program, and they head a steering committee as well of the NCDP, and they provide oversight in terms of the policy framework, various reports, etc., that CIDB is championing. In terms of the approval processes for this National Contractor Development Program, in September 2012, the Minister of Public Works, Honorable Minister Nesi, together with his MECs, launched by late 2012 the NCDP in its current form. That was a revised and updated version. And in that approval in 2012, it made specific mention again of the coalface of contractors interfacing with government leaders at the local municipal level, and that CIDB needs to take a process forward in terms of incorporating and collaborating with both SALGA and COCTA in terms of how the municipal rollout continues on the NCDP. Just a bit of a progress update in terms of that. As recent as March 2015, when the National Public Works MINMEC sat, Minister again reiterated to the CIDB that there was a structure called MISA, Municipal Infrastructure Support Agency, that had been set up through COCTA, and perhaps CIDB and MISA should also further engage to ensure that the Back to Basics program and the various initiatives that MISA is undertaking together with Treasury is supported and works closely with CIDB. In terms of the municipal progress, as to what have we done then at a municipal level, there's been an extensive collaboration with the structures of SALGA. A number of politicians sit on the various infrastructure and LED working groups, and we took all the way through to SALGA NEC approval, the NCDP, and we also had both technical and political MINMEC of COCTA approve the NCDP, like we did within the family of public works. And that then set the platform for rollout at a municipal level. More recently, just within the months of June and July, we've interacted extensively based on the 2015 MINMEC resolution to engage with MISA. We've interacted with all provinces with the technical consultants of MISA who give support to low capacity or distressed municipalities in terms of CIDB prescripts and more specifically also the National Contractor Development Program. But in all of this, we have to acknowledge, and here perhaps is one of the first challenges that we've had, is that the uptake and implementation at local government level is still a huge challenge, and I'll touch on some of those challenges in more detail later on. So what is this program that I've been speaking about in the MINMEC resolutions, etc.? Just to recap, the NCDP objectives speak to improving contractor grading status. I think you know that CIDB registers contractors on a database system, and then we grade those contractors from level 1, where it's quite easy to enter, all the way up to grade 9 with the more established and bigger companies. But the aim is that a contractor who enters onto a register would wish or have an expectation that over a period of time they would receive work and they'll improve their grading status. And so there needs to be a concerted effort to give focus to improving their grading status. And that's one of the objectives then of the NCDP. There are certain targeted categories and gaps in terms of where we would like to focus attention. Black ownership, woman ownership, youth ownership are specific areas for targeted interventions, and that's an objective. And then promoting sustainable contracting. It's one thing to be a contractor and also want to move up the grades. The other issue is being able to maintain a grade and to be sustainable, so horizontal growth of the company, not just a necessarily vertical or upward movement. And that's a key issue as well, the sustainability of enterprises once they are registered with the CIDB and not downgraded, leave the industry or go out through bankruptcy. The final objective there is to improve delivery and performance. It's all fair and well to say we're developing an industry, we're growing contractors, etc., but the issue of quality and performance, firstly, development can never come without a cost, but that cost should never be with regard to quality or performance. And so improved delivery and improved performance subject remains a key issue and objective of the NCDP. Our definition of, if we were broadly asked, so what is contracted development, we'd say it's a process to achieve those objectives I just mentioned, but we use the words deliberate and managed. It's not something that happens organically or naturally once the contractor registers or when it's an afterthought when we analyze stats. It must be a very deliberate and managed process to achieve the targeted developmental outcomes that have been preset. And so it's stepping stones. When you enter as a grade 1 or grade 2, perhaps we see a number of EPWP, job creation, learnership programs at that entry level of contractor development definition. And as you move up, perhaps the grades 2 to 6s in the CIDB gradings is where enterprise and contractor development is really happening. But we say right through the bands, right through from grades 4 all the way up to 7 or even maybe 8 and 9, there should be continued performance improvement. And that still speaks to the development of contractors in the industry. What are the methods of delivering contractor development? Well, there's two broad methods. The first is an incubator, or what we call a direct method. And we've seen a number of incubators in the industry in the late 90s, early 2000s. There's been a whole host of these incubators set up by government departments, by government agencies, under a whole host of names, Vukupile, Sakasonki, Sakabaki, Vukuzaki, are just some of these examples of development programs. Where contractors are taken into a incubated environment, much like a child is taken into an incubator when they can't manage on their own and they're given certain support and certain feeding until a certain time when they can stand on their own feet, such as an incubator. An incubator must be done through a targeting strategy. You can't take too many, right? You can't put too many children in an incubator. You can't put too many contractors in a contractor incubator. And the sustainability becomes crucial. And that's some of the learning lessons we've seen from incubators, where 10,000, 15,000 are put into an incubator, and it's just not sustainable. And so there's a huge expectation created that contractors go into this incubator expecting to grow, expecting to get work, and then never do, and then they turn on government officials or politicians to say expectation was created, no work opportunities, this incubator is not working. So sustainability is a key issue, and that's one of the key elements of a good incubator. Also, part of an incubator is graduation. You can't be in an incubator forever. Again, a child can't be able to walk and eat on their own and still be in an incubator. And that's been another issue. We call it dependency syndrome, where you get some contractors in an incubator for years and years and growing to high level, grade 7 or 8, and still being in an incubator. And so that's not a good practice of an incubator. And as I say, we've learned some lessons, and I'll share that with you. So that's one method of growing contractors. But this method as well is very targeted. There should be continued work opportunities, there should be mentors in place, criteria must be set, and not too many contractors can be grown in an incubator. You have to have continuous projects up front, and in an incubator you can probably grow about 20 to 50 contractors and bigger departments with bigger infrastructure budgets, like in the public works family, maybe 500 to 1,000 contractors, not more than that. A better way of reaching wider and growing more contractors is indirect targeting, where government departments, client departments, municipalities, when they're spending their budget, ensure that the projects are packaged in such a way that they are developmental. And I'll elaborate a bit more in terms of that and in terms of CIDB's practice notes when it comes to this method. But that's the two key methods of contractor development. On the incubator, what CIDB has done is to assist clients to say, yes, here's the National Contractor Development Program, and it explains all of these methods. But now to be able to roll out and implement, here's some guidelines. So here's a step-by-step checklist of what needs to be done. So at CIDB, German and his team go out in terms of capacitating the officials to say, here are the checklists, here's the policy, let's see the program that you have, whether it aligns to these best practices that we've drawn on. On the indirect methods, there's a procurement and delivery management unit within CIDB which says, we will now support client departments in ensuring that your SDM policies are geared towards development. So there's a concerted effort when a project is being put out, when the BECs and BACs, these evaluation committees that sit, they actually look at the project and say, how do we best package this project to achieve developmental objectives? And so there's a certain method that can be used. Instead of putting out a project at a grade 9 level, which means over 100 million rand, to just one contractor, why don't you consider unbundling that to 10 contractors? At 10 million rand, so we can actually spread the sunshine to some of the smaller contractors. Now that's a developmental method or procurement methodology that we talk about in our CIDB practice notes, and the decision will be up to the individual client departments, public works, within their SCM policies, municipality within their SCM policy to say, we will consider, and there will have to be considerations because there's some pros and cons of each of these methods. To unbundle, you'd need to have more project management capacity, more time to oversee a number of projects, etc. Because that 100 million rand project just became 10 smaller projects. So there are pros and cons of each method, but we're saying that these must be considered before procurement is undertaken, and don't just do business the same old, same old. There's some other guidelines that we've put out as well as CIDD, because there's been a level of concern, especially from some of the FCM legal practitioners, to say, is this not deemed to be a set-aside or ring-fence and unconstitutional, and therefore they'd be fearful of implementing and rolling it out in this way? And Practice Note 2 of 2006 from Treasury made specific mention to set-asides and ring-fencing. And we say, if an incubator follows the guidelines that we've put out as CIDB, like the EPWP has an exemption, and that is a development program in itself, so can an incubator be on the safe side of audit queries or Treasury or the specific practice note. And we've given a practice note and guideline in terms of how this can be achieved to allay those fears of those that would perhaps deem this as a set-aside. The Constitution in terms of Section 2172 makes specific allowance and allocation for development for socio-economic objectives, and so that's where we house it in legislation. So the evolution of the NCDP. As far back as 2000, there was talks on contractor workshops towards a sustainable program for development. In 2008, MINMEC of Public Works first gave CIDB the mandate to go out and come up with this uniform policy. The first versions were in 2008 and 2010 of the NCDP. We did a status quo analysis in about 2011 of the various programs that were out there, some on the right side of the law, some on the wrong side of Treasury's regulations, and some good practices that were being run by the likes of big clients like industrial development zones like Koha, Tasa with big spend, Eskom, Bukizaki in KZN. We looked at those programs and we commented in terms of the status quo report, and we came up with some baseline monitoring and evaluation before we then, in about 2011-12, came up with the current iteration and version of the NCDP, which is being rolled out, and its guidelines. So that's a step-by-step brief history of where the NCDP came from. Now let's look at some stats, given the policy framework and the background that I've sketched. Again, a bit of a busy slide, as CEO has mentioned, but let me try and unpack what these stats or the numbers are showing to you. Firstly, in terms of the grades, I've just put a brief picture at the bottom. Grade 2 contractor can do work up to about 650,000, a grade 9 contractor anything in excess of 130 million. Sorry, this is not in the presentation, it's in one, sorry, in the version that you've got before you, it's in one of the monitor documents that I provided. So you'll see a slide added, see the contractor development monitor annexure, we'll just put that as part. But it talks to the legislation and how they are spread across the grades. You'll see clearly at the entry level, grade 1, 2 to 4, there's a huge clustering of contractors. There's about 60% of contractors in the grade 2 to 4 levels. There's about 80% of our contractors at the grade 1 levels. And it tapers off. So this is a pyramid structure almost, where at the top there's very few contractors. At the lower levels, there's a larger number of contractors. In terms of transformation of the industry, let's just look at the narrow-based definition of transformation, and I'm saying here in terms of 50% plus black ownership. At the grade 2 to 4 levels, that's the lower level, the entry level, there's about 95% black ownership. Now I'm talking here of general building. In the civil engineering, which is a CE category, there's 94. So there's about 94-95% in terms of those two color codings, orange and green, at the grade 2 to 4 levels. As you start moving up, again, that pyramid structure is reflected where the numbers start to decrease in terms of black ownership. So at grade 5 and 6 levels, about 84 to 88%. As you move up to 7 and 8, it starts to drop again, 67 to 71%, and at the grade 9 level, 24 to 30%. So clearly here, the picture that is being reflected is to say that at the grade 7, 8, 9 levels, the black ownership levels are extremely low. The black ownership levels, however, at the grades 2 to 6 levels are in the 90% domain, And so when we give pointers to planning departments, we say you must continue to sustain the work opportunities for those contractors, because it's, let's call it, black on black competition when it comes to gender opportunities at the grades 2 to 6 levels. But you must continue to offer work opportunity to those contractors so they can be sustainable. And as I mentioned, the demand side or the work opportunity side continues to be in existence for those black contractors. Furthermore, as you move up to the grade 7, 8, 9 levels, there are gaps there in terms of the black ownership of the companies, but there are opportunities to be able to target for development certain black enterprises at that level, and to be able to start increasing the number of black contracting capacity there, we need to look at the supply side at the grade 5 and 6 levels to say how do we grow those contractors into those upper domains. And then what is the role as well of the established sector, the grade 7, 8, 9s, in terms of their BEE requirements, charter requirements, subcontracting requirements to offer opportunities, and how can government departments procure in such a way that they start to say to those bigger established companies there must be something done to be able to develop the grade 5 and 6s into that specific area. So that's what the picture, the transformations that are showing us in terms of ownership. Also, if you would put it in a chart such as that which is reflected at the grade 2 to 4 and 5 to 6 levels, you can see a lot above 80%, and that's a very slight incline because obviously at those levels it's not going to be radical or exponential growth. So in the 80 to 90% just reflected slightly differently. However, the slide that you'd want to refer to is the next one, which looks at 7, 8 as well as grade 9, and there you see we want to see a step change from the 20% levels or the 40% levels to something in the 80 to 90% in terms of black ownership. And that's where we need to look at what interventions can we ensure would achieve the exponential growth this far into our democracy in terms of transformation of this industry. Again, I'm looking at black ownership still. If I were to do a comparative between the 2015 and 2011 stats, I've put a table side by side of each of those years. And if you should just cross-look at those percentages, the grade 2 levels, in 2011, 92% black ownership, that's a pretty good level. So yes, increase slightly, maybe 93% black ownership at the grade 2 levels. As we start moving up the grades, you see the numbers starting to taper off or decrease. So let's look at grade 9. In 2011, there was 8% black ownership. Yes, it's doubled. It's gone more than 100% if you were just to talk to stats, but the numbers are extremely low still. So yes, 19%, but 19% is nowhere near 80 or 90%. So clearly at the grade 9 level, more established companies, black ownership levels are still, that we say the depth and pace of transformation has been way too slow. In the middle band, you'll see changes like 70 to 78% or 69 to 72%. So there has been change. Again, we're stressing the message, not fast enough, not deep enough. This is one of the slides that's in the transformation monitor, not in the handout, so I added this in the last slide. Black ownership, so how have contracts been awarded then to those? We've spoken about ownership, but how is the workflow and the opportunities been? And this reflects broadly then from some of the stats that we have available, and the stats is not really readily available, so we've cross-checked a few references on this. But we're saying that at the civil engineering and general building levels, the grades 7, 8, 9 is where there's been high amounts, so those are big value projects that are being awarded because of the grading levels there. Are going to those contractors. But I just showed you the slide before this which showed that most of the black contracting capacity is actually sitting at the grades 1 to 6 levels. So that paints a picture as well as to how we need to change the manner, the mindset of procurement so we start looking at projects not going out at 7, 8, 9 levels but starting to go out at other levels where it can be done. Some of the bigger projects, Kusile, power stations, etc., a large portion of those projects are not labor-intensive necessarily, but more capital and equipment. And so there are some projects that can be packaged for development and some that cannot, or are more difficult to. If I were to look at the 10-year stats now on how contractors have upgraded, so 10 years goes to before the NCDP, or just when it was being conceptualized in its first 2008 policy formulation, but let's look at how contractors have been moving up the grades. And we can say roughly an average is about 62-63% across the GB and CE categories of contractors that actually upgraded on the CIDB grading status between grades 5 and 8. So between grades 5 and 8, 63% of contractors have moved up the grades. In fact, between the grades 2 and 4 levels, our stats are showing that 80% of contractors have been upgraded by at least one grade. So that's a good story to tell, to say yes, contractors are most definitely being moved up the grades or growing, and when we grade contractors, we look at their financial capability, their history of works that they've received, and that's a reflection on then of their upward mobility.
Wow.
In terms of the incorporation at local government levels of NCDP, we've conducted some reviews and status analysis to look at, so how have contractor development programs been implemented at the local levels, and what's been the degree of alignment to the guidelines that the NCDP puts out. And there's some findings in that regard. Today we've analyzed a whole host of development programs, and we've drawn a number of lessons that I've been alluding to, spoken about large numbers or too large numbers of thresholds, how you should have mentors in place, how you should graduate contractors after a period of time. So those are some of the lessons that we've drawn from these programs. But just to put out there to say, yes, in each of the provinces, there have been concerted efforts to initiate development programs, to refine the existing development programs, to align the programs that were out there to the NCDP guidelines. And these programs reflected in excess of about 1,500 contractors within incubated environments. Most of the contractors, in terms of our guidelines, if you are an incubator, must be in grades 2 to 6, and so that's a specific requirement of registration of CDPs on our database. Over the last 3 years, and that's now purely within the realm of the current version of the NCDP, we've looked at upgrade stats, moving again one grade or more, so that's over the last 3 years. 28% of grade 1s have moved up, and an average 35%, so the grade 2 to 4s, where the contractor development programs are really pitching, about 48% of contractors within grades 2 to 4 have upgraded one grade or more. Again, a good story to tell there. The bad story, or the issue for us to focus on then, would say, what about the other 52%? So if 48% have moved up one grade, what's happened to 52% of the contractors? Well, they've either been stagnant, or they've maintained and been sustainable and held the grade, or they've been downgraded or removed from the registers. And that's an area to focus on, to say, what's the attrition rate and what's happened to those contractors? Have they not received enough work opportunities? Have they not grown, etc.? On the civil, the previous one on the average of 35% was specifically general building. You'll see the growth in contractor development programs because most of them are pitched at civil engineering, and it becomes easier for routine road maintenance projects, etc. So in the family of public works, roads and transport, or in the Department of Transport, a number of development programs and a number of contractors in CDPs are actually housed in the civil fraternity. And so there you'd see 48% average, which is much higher than the general building category. Contractors between grades 2 and 6, between 46 and 50% of contractors there have been upgraded one or more grades. In the family of public works, through National Department of Public Works, what's been the progress? I can report that we have extremely detailed stats on a quarterly basis that we receive from provincial public works. We consolidate all of that and we provide it to the National Department of Public Works Steering Committee on contractor development, chaired by the DDG of Policy. There's about 1,500 contractors in DPW incubated contractor development programs. Further progress in terms of public works initiatives on contractor development is that their policy, the overall supply chain management policy of public works, has been updated and refined about a year, year and a half ago, and it has explicitly contained now initiatives that align directly to the NCDP. There's a section 10.4 within that policy that talks very specifically to contractor development. So that's been a huge step change in the mentality and the procurement methods that are being used that look at unbundling term contracts and incubators. The National Department of Public Works CFO champions with the various CFOs from the provincial works departments a forum where we've capacitated all the CFOs and those finance and supply chain officials on the NCDP and on the procurement methods. There's been some supply chain management circulars that have been provided to officials in the family of public works. And their contractor incubator program, German as far back as the late 90s, was within public works, running an emerging contractor development program. Since then, it's evolved into an incubator, and it's been updated and is in the process of being fully aligned to the guidelines for NCDP. So Public Works is a champion of contractor development from within the family, and these are being reported on. Even the DG forums is called FOSAD. So contractor development, I've talked a lot on targeted equity ownership. That's the ownership stats, black ownership specifically, and moving up the grades in terms of grading status. But contractor development, remember when I spoke of the objectives, I mentioned a further element which spoke to performance and quality of work. And in that regard, as a CIDB, we conduct various indicator studies to look at our clients satisfied with the level of performance and quality of contractors. And what we picked up from our 2014 indicators and surveys was that clients were neutral or dissatisfied with the performance of contractors on 16% of projects. So that's concerning, but 84% of the time, they were satisfied. So on 16% is where we need to target our initiatives to ensure how do we address the issue of performance on that 16%. What, however, is concerning is that contractors, when they were surveyed and asked, so what do you think of clients and how you know the performance of the clients are, 20% of the time they were dissatisfied, and 22% of the time they were dissatisfied specifically with the quality of tender documents and specifications, saying that deviations in the processes or amendments or refinements and the creep, etc., was at the hands of projects not being adequately scoped and specced. And so that's an area for us to look both ways and not always point fingers to contractors in terms of quality and performance of work, and areas for us to work on as clients and government. As a CIDB, we've got some interventions that speak specifically to looking at recognition of contractors, looking at performance of contractors, especially through our performance reports. We have a register of projects where contracts are enlisted on, and that there's various processes to check how those contractors are progressing and how we're closing out. And we also have a competence standard for contractors. Also, there are certain challenges that we face in terms of utilization and use of our register of projects, but we can say within the family of public works, we have set a trend and example in terms of other clients also towing the line and complying with the use of these various standards and processes. I think it won't be apt for me to give a presentation of this nature if I don't talk to Chairperson's challenges and risks that we face in the industry, and specifically in the implementation of the National Contractor Development Program. Clearly, there's been a low pace or speed in the uptake of the SCM policies and in the performance plans and the IEPs of municipalities in terms of the best practices and the policies and the frameworks that I've spoken of. And that's a key issue that we need to, as CIDB, have certain interventions upon. And in this regard, we've been able to give enhanced and additional client capacitation support and training. There are challenges of attrition and turnaround of staff in various departments, of the skills levels and skill sets of officials, but we've been giving focused client awareness workshops and targeted capacitation sessions, and working closely with Treasury, MISA, COCTA, SALGA, etc., in terms of giving those interventions as support. As a CIDB, we also report on a regular basis to the HODs and the MECs and MINMEC levels in terms of everything that you've seen here today and specific interventions with regard to their programs or gaps in their departments or entities. We conduct assessment of various SCM policies, and we do alignment exercises to say perhaps you should, as a client department, refine your SCM policy or your contractor development policy in these manners. And that's part of the support that we continue to offer. And we make proposals then on their policy refinements and changes as clients department, implementing department officials. Further challenges is that there's clearly inadequate institutional capacity in the public sector and inability to allocate, target, and spend the budgets. This speaks to the human resource element, but also the structures of departments. Too often contractor development is an afterthought. It's not entrenched. It's not cross-cutting. It hasn't been thought up right from the conception of projects. And that's what we talk about, the planning processes and how contractor development needs to be built in and how they need to be target set and how the IDPs need to speak to those specific targets and the department APPs need to speak to those targets. And as a CIDB then, we've come up with interventions in this regard to approve very specific guidelines to say, if you have this budget, this is the number of contractors that could be in an incubator, or this is how you should be reporting, and here are some reporting formats, here are some practice notes, and we conduct awareness and capacitation of officials along those lines. There's also lack of proper monitoring and evaluation systems, so even after policies are put in place, clearly we've seen that even at the municipal levels, the medium capacity municipal levels, there hasn't been adequate monitoring and evaluation systems when it comes to contract development. EPWP, yes, is well taken care of in some instances because of the systems that have been put up by Public Works in terms of that reporting, but on contract development, they aren't geared to appropriate reporting. So the CIDB intervention in this regard is, yes, we've had some manual checklists and reporting templates, and we consolidate those, and that's how we come up with the steps and the presentations that we, and the information and the reports that we made available. And we're in the final stages now of coming up with an electronic monitoring and evaluation system that interfaces fully with our register of contractors and our register of projects. It'll allow us for real-time analysis and for various exception reporting and dashboards in terms of contractor development reporting. But in the interim, our manual systems is a bit resource-intensive and labor-intensive and helps us to clean some of the data first-hand, but we'll be moving to this automated system soon. And I'm saying sooner than in the next 2 months. In terms of delayed payments, this is a huge challenge. There have been issues of contractors, even big contractors, going out of business because of the inability of government departments, of municipalities, to appropriately plan, to budget, and then to pay on time. In some instances, work is conducted and the budget was never in place, and so the projects are left standing midpoint. So there's been a huge outcry from industry, especially the small contractors, and as I said, a number of other contractors, to say what is being done in terms of, yes, Treasury might have some regulations in this regard or guidelines, but it's crippling the industry as a whole, and more specifically, it's eroding away at the very objectives of contractor development, which speak to payment on time as one of the fundamental principles. And at CIDB, again, we've got some interventions in this regard. We put out some practice notes to say, if you're adhering to our guidelines for contractor development, not only must you pay on time, 30 days if that's your policy, why not increase your payment cycles? Why not look at quicker, faster turnaround on those payment cycles? Some of our more progressive clients, like Sunrail, is looking at every 7 days running payment cycles. And those are opportunities and learning lessons for other clients. Obviously, you'd have to have the resources and you'd have to write that into your policies as client departments. But as CIDB, we've come out now with prompt payment regulations for payment within 30 days and we've presented it for public comment. And we've come out with informed practice notes that speak to the issue of prompt payment as well. And so that, from a legislative perspective, also takes things a bit further and doesn't just rely on the goodwill of client departments to pay on time. The other risk that we face is collusion cartels and corruption in the industry. This definitely has a detrimental impact on the South African construction industry. It erodes away at the potential opportunities for contractor development. The CIDB has interventions in this regard. We have a code of conduct for all of those in the construction industry. We have an anonymous fraud reporting hotline, or the ability to come into any of our provincial offices or meet with any of our officials and share with us such information. We extend this to politicians, we extend it to administrators, of officials, and the public at large to say if anyone is aware of such, bring it to our attention. We have a zero tolerance stance to this. We have a forensic investigation process where we will conduct and give opportunity to everyone to air their views and run hearings. And those on our registers will be faced with sanctions if they are issued as a guilty party on any of our prescripts or code of conduct. We also champion as a CIDB, together with Public Works, various transparency initiatives, and we roll this out to contractors and to clients. Jefferson, coming up right to the end now, my last slide on risks and challenges is to say that contractor development is not mandatory and is at the will of clients, and that is the challenge. It's voluntary. It's at the will. So we can say and come up with all of these frameworks, guidelines, policies, promotion of these to client officials, capacitation and training. We can ask for it to be written into SCM policies. But we cannot actually, as CIDB or Public Works, set for a municipality a specific target on development and growth. We can give some guidelines, as we've done. What we've done then is further intervention to say, so how far can we take this issue of prescription? Yes, we can come come up with certain standards in terms of our regulation, and we've done that as a standard for indirect targeting. So we can say that in every grade 7, 8, 9 project, those are the big projects I mentioned, there must be a minimum of 5% that's allocated for subcontracting opportunities to the grade 2 to 6s. So there's something we can write into law and prescription and come up as a standard, and we've done that. We can come up with a whole host of informed practice notes on the various methods that I spoke of and allow the clients then to decide when is an opportune time to actually roll out in terms of unbundling or term contracts or framework contracts. And again, in the family of public works, all of those methods are being explored and used in different circumstances, and there's been uptake in other clients as well. We can create a huge level of awareness and capacitation of officials and politicians, because politicians drive policies at municipal level as well. So we've done that in the various fraternities. You've seen our outreach at the Salga, COCTA, MISA processes, and the NEC approvals there. There will have to be a role that CIDB plays together with public works in terms of the future reviewing of the CIDB Act. Our Act is a 2000 Act, and it's due for review. And there's an upcoming Public Works Act as well in the process. And so we'll have to be extremely strategic in terms of looking at how we can word in certain regulations and prescripts that can start to entrench firmly contracted development for rollout and greater reach. As a CIDB, we have a contracted development strategy then. Everything that I've spoken of is contained within this overall strategy. It talks to a number of bubbles, creating an enabling environment, and that is unpacked in terms of what we do in terms of each of those bubbles. So the enabling environment, construction skills, contract development programs, performance improvements, procurement delivery, driven delivery outcomes, programmatic training, monitoring and evaluation, and the ability to communicate all of this forms part of our strategy. As a CIDB, we are reviewed independently every 5 years. And so at the last five-year review of the CIDB, which happened about a year ago, there were specific issues in terms of NCDP with regard to, yes, acknowledging the work that's been done to date, talking of work that needs to be done in the future and the processes, and talking of specifically a recommendation was alignment to PICC and SIP projects, big infrastructure spend, and how those can also further entrench contractor development. And so we take those forward as the recommendations from all parties that review the CIDB and from those that we interact with, like we would from you today. Chairperson, my final slide talks to recommendations then to this Parliamentary Portfolio Committee. I hope we as CIDB have been able to give you a snapshot of what contract development is about, that we've been able to show you the initiatives related to the National Contract Development Program, the progress in that regard, the challenges, and what we're actually doing specifically to address those industry challenges, institutional challenges and the like, and to say to the Portfolio Committee then that we hope that you're able to note our presentation and endorse the continued and accelerated promotion and championing of the NCDP, its framework and its guidelines as a government-wide policy, and its reporting thereon continues to be in the ways that have been done to the Steering Committee of Public Works in this regard, and the monitoring processes be further entrenched. And secondly, that the Portfolio Committee continue to provide support in the implementation of the NCDP and entrenching it as a policy directive, not just across the family of public works, but in your interactions with other infrastructure departments and clusters, and to instill within the PICC and SIPs and other major infrastructure platforms the reiteration of the NCDP and alignment thereto. With that, thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. Thanks.
Members, I note Honourable Dreyer, Honourable Matebe, Honourable Sudani, Masiela, in that order, Honourable Dreyer.
Mr. Chairman, yes, thank you very much. I mean, the whole idea of this CIDB is to develop and promote specifically black entrepreneurs and black engineers and black technical people. My question is, do you also employ Cubans specifically at all, Cuban engineers, Cuban technical people? If so, what are the percentages there? And then the same question regarding people from other African countries outside of South Africa itself. Are there people from wherever, other African countries? And then the third point is actually just a comment more than a question. That's the delayed payments by government departments. I mean, government, it's a government program. You're not doing it just because one day you got up and had a fancy idea. You're doing that because you're required to do so by government itself. And then government is kind of actually hindering you in achieving the stated objectives by not paying on time. And small businesses and small enterprises are going under because of that. I'm sure you've taken it up with government or the various government departments, but can you tell me what was kind of the action responses you got from government departments regarding this issue? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's from my side.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is a concern. I still remember last year we went to CIDP offices. Wanted to find out how did they develop in terms of trading, the method they are using in terms of trading. Because we still got the same answer. Yeah, of last year that black ownership has not increased significantly over the past 3 years. So I don't know what is happening. What is the obstacle? Why should the black people are not increasing in terms of trading? And the methods of trading 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, particularly because some of these small trading belong to us. We cannot. Especially women, when it comes to grade 8, 7, between 7 and 9, it's really a problem. It's really a challenge. Secondly, question of payment. I think I've answered questions last year, and they said to come with a policy, and really it's crippling the industry, especially at the entry point, when we are still knowing this business, we wanted to build or whatever, but now they don't pay you after 8 months. It's really crippling the industry. Can you just come up with a new method, what you have done? Because the answer and the presentation is still the same as last year. Probably there's nothing changed today. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate the comprehensive report. Since I joined this committee, the Member of Parliament 5, last year is the first time that we get this kind of report. And I know the amount of noise that I made last year, particularly if I remember when in the November meeting, when it was clear that there wasn't actually any comprehensive program to develop their contractors, and I was happy when in March you came back and declared that indeed you had now started a program. It's different from a concept of just developing contractors. Indeed, the detail shows that it's only now that the department is looking at contractor development in specific terms, and that I must say I appreciate. Now we're going to see some movement going forward, and we'll continue to monitor the progress. I don't see the transformation targets here. Mm-hmm. And without a target, you can only wallop right through. Transformation is a big issue in South Africa. I've been listening as carefully as I could. I don't see or hear anything that says, by such and such a year, this is where we want to be with transformation. And for me, that is going to be a big handicap, because you don't seem to be working towards a target like maybe. Because 100% could be a desirable figure, but we have got more than just the black population in South Africa. and we don't want to do as government something that's going to automatically cause other races to feel that government is not for them. And I think that's important for the progress and stability of the country, as much as I'm black. But what are the targets? Socioeconomic targets. If you look at your objectives, I don't see the word socioeconomy. You can put them on the screen one more time. So it looks like there is an anticipation that when they are, when black contractors are moving up, there will automatically be socioeconomic improvement. But what will you be driving from inside yourselves to make sure that you monitor the change in the lifestyle? I worked in the construction and, you know, industry as a facilitator for some years. And one of the things that we had to do in the closeout report, the school's building program, was to say the lives of the local people who were employed by the contractor have improved in this way. They started sending their kids to school. They started buying beds for themselves where they had no beds. There was this and that. And I promise you, CIDB, if you don't have those specific targets in the closeout reports, that's going to be forgotten. People are very prone to criticize government for paying late. I don't belong to the ANC. Very, very prone, but they are less commendable when it comes to, or rather less strict about themselves when it comes to how they handle their money. So I don't know if when you issue contracts, there is a division, Mr. Naidu, within your section that says, let's trace what they have done with the money. Have their lives actually changed? Because that is the bed on which they can rest at night when in a period when they don't have work. I don't think their contractors were guaranteed work on a continuous basis. Some are getting work on a continual basis. Two different, say, you know, senses there. But their lean times, this is where the socioeconomic element becomes your baby, because some people are very careless in terms of handling their finances. So that's why I'm starting there. Maybe in your presentation this question is answered. If not, then I'll appreciate your kindness to respond to it. I had this question earlier in the presentation, and then there was a time when Mr. Knight was really flying. How many have upgraded from grade 1 to 5 in the last 5 years? I repeat, if this question has been answered in one of the slides, please pardon me. Grade 2 to 4. What is the contractor budget? It's good to have percentages in terms of we had 1,000 blacks that were, you know, supposed to move from one grade to the other. 1,000 of them moving from grade 2 to 4. And you give us a nice figure, 80% have moved up. Now, if you look at the budget that they've been handling, you could find that the actual budget, although the numbers are high, but the actual budget, money that's in their pockets, how does it compare with what comes out of a, you know, government-issued contract? How big is the volume of budget that has been earned by grades 2 to 4? That's my specific question. So I'm saying we are going to be working with two columns here, the percentage in terms of numbers, as well as the amount of budget that has been earned by those. Because this is where you would feel challenged to say, going to slide number 37, where you feel constrained by the fact that contractor development is not mandatory, then you would influence us as the portfolio committee to say, hey, let's restructure the contract such that a portion of the contract, grade 8 and 9, must necessarily go that direction. Which law in the country would prohibit you from coming up with that proposal? I would like to get an answer. Because you seem to be posting this as a final poser. Why can't we have contracts that say a percentage ahead of you, saying something about 5%? Is there a law in South Africa that says you cannot change the contracts such that if you issue a 100 million contract to a grade 9 contractor a percentage has to go to address the socio-economic needs of the country by saying this percentage. But you look at the scope of the work and say this amount of work can be done by people who are in grade 3 or grade 4. And you say it has to be. And when you score, you look at that. Who has actually complied with that? You would say kind of forcing it, but if you back it up by running an efficient school of development to say that we do provide you, you know, big contractors with a pool of trained personnel who can actually perform at that level, the quality of the work that you will give, deliver at the end of the day will not be compromised. To provide them with the pool. This is what we're saying in this one. When people say, don't talk about quotas, we say, no quotas, train the people so that when they qualify to be in the fruitful team, quotas apply only when you don't train the people. So this would then link with the training program to say we've got personnel towards the end. Okay. Why do we still have very few black contractors, you know, in the higher grades? And why is it that we have got this constraint in the last 3 years? I would link those. Slide 22, I would commend you for that. We really appreciate it. I can't remember what it refers to, but we commend you for what is reflected in slide 22. I don't want to be less liberal and seem to forget. We appreciate that 80% of grades were upgraded by at least one grade. We appreciate that statistics, but compared with those two columns, you know. And slide 34, what is the source of this challenge, this SEM policy? I've had the interventions that you propose, but what is the source of it? Is it because politicians don't seem to buy in, or is it because there's resistance by the staff, municipal level or whatever level? Let's look at the source. Tell us what the source is so that we can engage with you as another arm of government. You know? Maybe your proposed interventions are based on your knowledge of the source, but you haven't disclosed to us what the source of the problem is. This SEM policies that are skewed the other way around. And I think I'm covered, Chair. Thank you very much for giving me an opportunity.
Thank you, Chair. Just to add on to what Member Dreyer was saying, is there any assessment or any kind of a breakdown per department, per level of government, per province, local government to assess whether contractors are being paid on time? I think it would be interesting to look at the statistics there. I think it's crucial to support this particular project or initiative. And then also with the higher the grading that the company or the companies or the contractors seem to move, the less they seem to become. So is there a way of expressing the value of the contractors' business as opposed to the number of contractors? What's the share of call it the value of contractors? Is it possible to express it differently? Because I'm not sure whether that is because there's a lack of movement, or whether there's one or two contractors dominating the call it contracts being on offer. So is it possible to, what's the value of the companies that we're talking about as expressed as a share of the industry? Is it possible to give us any feedback in that regard? Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me also commend the CIDP for the presentation that they have given us today. I wanted to check as far as the women contractors are concerned. You did mention about them, but I wanted to find out as to whether you have any special assistance that were given to women, prior to women, to make sure that they also match their counterparts, not just putting them in the same basket as everybody. Do we have a situation where we are targeting women specifically? How are we doing it? If it's there, what type of interventions are we making that look at? You said something about the MISA, but I did not get it very well. How does it assist municipalities for their service delivery, this MISA? if you could visit it, revisit it again. The other one is about the rate of these contractors who are put in the incubator. What is the rate of their graduation into out of it? How long do they get into this incubation? And how long do they take to graduate? How many have already graduated so far? And do we have others that are really dropping out of it? Is it possible for that? Or all of them, they eventually graduate once they are in that incubator? We used to have bigger contractors like those in grade 8, 9 and so on, joining ventures with the smaller ones. Do we still have that? Because it used to, instead of assisting or capacitating those who are in the lower grades, instead of capacitating them, it used to not really to assist them that much. But it was a good thing, but needed some pain and beating. It needed to be corrected there and there so that it can assist them. Do we still have it? If we have it, how does it work? Does it really assist those smaller ones? There was also a slide number 20, which shows a very slow change from one grade to the other. What attributes to this small, slow change? And I'm sure it goes hand in glove with the targets that one of my members has already indicated. Because if we don't have any targets, we'll spend 10 years or even more just saying there is a slow change, there is a slow change. But if we have got a target, we'll be knowing that our target is this, we are only up to here for this 5 years, then what can we do to have a radical change so that we reach what this, the targets that we have put ourselves for? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, honorable members. The IDB. the irony of emerging contractors and the questions that they normally get is that we can't give you any tenders or work. Muhammad, don't go away. It's questions that we're raising that you asked me to raise, so don't go away, please. No, he can get his own water. Come back, Muhammad. Sit down. Yes, water. Come, sit down. You asked me to raise these questions. Previous years, CEO, the Western Cape was quite well known for the built environment. In actual fact, it's either you have to be a builder going into the built environment as an artisan when you finish your matric or finish schooling. And the Western Cape produces, I think it was 80% of the artisans in the built environment of South Africa. And now, I don't think we are producing even 20%. Because people are not much interested in going into the built environment anymore because of the lack of support that they're getting. And you talk to people like who Muhammad represents, Mr. Muhammad represents, at a meeting with them here in Parliament. And it's people that their life long, the built environment is in their blood. It's their life. They grew up with that. They went to study with that. It's their daily bread that they are making. But with the uncooperative corporation of CIDB, they had to close down. They must go and sell and open up stalls and all that. What are we doing to get that back? The fact of the matter is that if you are not a big company, you won't get to a grade 9. You have to be a big company to get to grade 9. And yeah, I'm talking about in the built environment, I'm not talking about black owned only. It goes across all races. I had a meeting the other night in Muizenberg, and some of our European, or what we called white, but I call them South Africans, elders came to me, master builders, and they said that we can't get jobs in. Because when we go there, they tell us that, guys, you are not graded properly to get the jobs. And I know those are the guys that is master builders I'm talking about. So it's across the board. It's not just black owned that is suffering. It's across the board that South Africans are suffering in terms of which, excuse me if I'm wrong, but which I think and which I've been told is in the ability, the lack of ability of CIDB to utilize. You talk about an incubation program, but you're not utilizing the incubation program. Because, I mean, if we did that, you've told us that last year, that you are utilizing the incubation program. But so far, the numbers are still the same. There's not much movement and growth. There's not much movement going upwards. We've asked you also a question last year about the collusion between what the Competition Commission has found and the cartels, the big cartels, and the fines. You still owe us an answer on that. I think so. My right colleagues, Honorable Mateva, you were there when we asked them. And you guys promised that if we'll come back with the report, we even then said that let's get you and the Competition Commission together in one room and so that we can get the truth out of whom. So when are we getting that, first of all? And how far did you get? How many of these big companies, great nines, that you have found that has overstepped the mark, have you downgraded or has been suspended or has been blacklisted for not doing jobs with you anymore? Or for not getting jobs, or for not being graded into higher grades. Because look at what's happening on the Western Cape now. Falcon, Oricon, all those things. The government has spent, the provincial government has spent a lot of money. These guys came there with graded certificates, said, oh, we grades 8 or 7, we can take on the job. Afterwards, there's nothing. Look at the moment what's happening now with the schools that's been built here in the Western Cape. Now, yes, we can blame the government, but the government is not out there. The premier was not out there with a shovel and all that and overall to build the school. It's the contractors which have been graded by the CIDB that does this shoddy work. Do you ever do oversight on when you grade people? To check the workmanship. CEO, over to you, ma'am.
Thank you very much, honorable members, for the questions. I will respond to a few of the questions raised and give opportunity to my colleagues to assist me in some of the responses. I'll go straight into the delayed payment one. I think that's a critical one and one that we currently very much passionate about and dealing with
that in place is government is very fond of going straight into litigation, and most of our smaller contractors do not have access to capital to defend themselves in court, and most of them have to pay on the proceeding end of litigation measures. And this is why we've now gone for change. So we are in that space right now. We can give you some progress support once we've taken the revised regulations to our next file, but it's very much on in the radar. In terms of
that register and see what is out there. And it's there. It's available on our website. Everybody can see it. So why they're not using that to their advantage is the problem. And this is where the CIDB has gone all out in terms of capacitation. And we have a certain authority. The CIDB, we find ourselves running all over the country. We've got representation in every province. And our guys are out talking to capacitation programs right across infrastructure problems. It's quite administratively heavy on us, but we are doing it. We are doing it, and we're working on it. And we are making small wins, but the wins need to be accelerated. And we need your support on that. I think the question on the market share of green light contractors. You know, the register of contractors again, of projects again, would have given us that insight. And there are indicators to you that we are borrowing statistics from institutions such as the Bureau for Economic Research and things to pull together what is actually happening out there in the industry. And I'm going to be so bold as to say that clients actually prefer to award up the register than down. And if you look at slide, I think Gerard actually skipped over it. It's a slide that gives us an indication of client satisfaction. There is no evidence that tells us that there is poor quality coming out of contractors at the lower grade. In fact, quite the opposite. It's telling us that clients are pretty satisfied with the quality of work. So it's about the mindset. That's that's our talking to. A large portion of clients are saying we're very happy with what is going on in industry. So they're a big statistic. Why is it that you're not packaging your project to where development opportunities lie? It's a slide 17 for me, and this is where I said at the outset I wanted to put more emphasis on slide 17. This is what I call the window of opportunity into industry. And if you try to understand this slide and package the project appropriately, and I think one of the members actually alluded to the fact, if you're awarding or if your project is in the range of the grade 7, 8, and 9 contractors, there is nothing stopping you from being prescriptive to say, I want a grade 4 grade to be graduated to grade 4 at the end of the contract. You are the owner and you can demand it. But it's a range of problems, and you know, I don't like to speak on behalf of clients, but if there's no leadership, then it's not going to happen. And if we need to force it down, as Mr. Nigel alluded to, the fact that the CIDB Act doesn't give us that power to say, you shall do this. It says there's an integrated strategy that we must come up with to do this, and so far the integrated strategy is probably not giving us the right results that we want, which is why in collaboration with the National Department of Public Works and the forthcoming development of the Public Works Act is probably going to get far more successful than this integrated approach. Just with that, I'm going to hand over to my two colleagues to see what issues I haven't touched with, and I might come back with it.
Okay, my name is Chairman Pascal. I just want to touch on two issues. The issue that may relate to the issues of the methods for grading. I understood in the question was a suggestion that the registration criteria could be also constraining the development of the consultants, for the movement of contractors from the lower to the higher grading criteria. And I wanted to say, if you look at slide 19 here, that yes, maybe it is fact, but periodically the CIDB, we sit down to review the registration criteria. Among others is to address the concerns that we pick up from stakeholder engagement, and also to address the issues of improving in terms of the integrity of the system itself, to address the issues that have been addressed, why would the contractor be graded grade 7 but not B be able to operate at that level. So those are some of the issues that we looked into. The reason I wanted to look into grade 7, you realize there at the end of 2013, there's a slight improvement there. That is also one indicator of some of the considerations that we've made. That happened exactly 2013, that was when Minister approved amendment to their regulations. One of the regulations or requirements that could maybe have been an impediment to movement of smaller contractors to the higher grading criteria could have been the requirement for them to have professionals in their employ. If I'm a small business and I have engineers in my employ, I'm overloading my overheads. I can't afford that. I'll bring them as and when required. But at the same time, we say we have to manage the risk. So we were saying we will remove that criteria, that requirement for professionals, and not study because small contractors have been able to move from 5th grade to grade 7. But we have not exposed the industry to any undue risk because we have now said we providing the guidelines on the clients how to manage that. The requirement for professional basically, that responsibility now lies with their clients to manage. So I'm just citing that yes, there is merit in what has been said, but we are taking consideration of that periodically. Currently we have a host of issues that we're also looking into. Is the issue of downgrading of contractors, is the issue of what we refer to as downgrading, where some of the contractors are saying they need to be protected from competition from the higher graded contractors tendering at a very low grading levels, a grade 7 tendering for a grade 2 job or something. So those are some of the issues that currently are being discussed or that we've set up task teams to look into those issues. The other issue that I thought maybe I would comment on, what was that issue? Oh, Jared, when I'm still looking for those issues, I want to comment. Can you comment on some of the issues that we have there?
Thanks, Chairperson. Let me try and pick up what you've done and not.
The question on women on contractors. You see, in contractor development, we're showing the statistics, and again, clients need to understand who do they want to target. For example, say in the Northern Cape, there is really low levels of women contractors registered. Again, the procurement lever can be used to say, I want to improve women contractors that are in that area, or if they are a small number, let's develop them first. And then they develop a ring-fenced approach, because Gerard has also given an indication. We've moved away from the socially set aside notion, because we've looked at it in a developmental context. And I think the question was raised. Nobody's going to challenge us if we use the developmental responsibility that the Constitution gives us. And this is what we've done in terms of the practice. So clients go look into the register, understand that there are low levels of development, use the procurement user and process those figures. It's happening, but it's happening at a very low rate. If I could just give an example, the National Department of Public Works, for example, in the 2013-14 financial year, 26% of their budget went to women on contract. Out of, I think, a budget of 830-some-odd million that was spent, about 200 million awarded to the women on contract. So what the CIDP is now doing going forward is we try to get into that space to monitor the budget spend of clients across infrastructure departments. The problem is Treasury hands out the budget. So we are at the back end of it. You know, so all we can do now is look at, they look at their budget, how are they spending their budget in relation to the leadership of contractors. And we can probably come back in a year's time to give you that information. To say, this is what each department has had, this is our leadership of contractors, and this is where the national budget. That is work in progress that we are now putting in place for in our APC for the next financial year. I thought that was important to know.
Okay, one of the issues that I also wanted to comment before Gerard comes in, and this I'm not responding to your question, but I just wanted us to maybe to the understanding from my CEO here that maybe some of the issues we're not necessarily going to provide responses to, but these are issues that we'll take up to consider, you know, in our management meetings. The issues of setting targets, I think we should be looking to, and there's a matter of agency. The issue of socioeconomic, measure of socioeconomic impact of some of the construction activities, I like the comment that has been made. Maybe there are, maybe we might have to provide sort of a guideline on how clients should also, what to call it, keep or monitor the impact of those activities, of the construction activities within the areas where construction is taking place. I was immediately reminded of some of the stats that we used to generate at Public Works. I remember when we were building the Kokstad prison, we also actually collated information of how economic activity was stimulated around the area, those kind of things. And I'm saying, I think maybe, yeah, it's something that we maybe need to provide guidelines on how to monitor that. I think that one will also note. There was the issue of, yeah, the concern grading not increasing and why contractors not moving up the grades or slow. But I think what we also need to reflect on is the that construction is also a cyclical, I mean, it's very cyclical, what you call it, industry. Sometimes when the chairperson is saying he's meeting most of those master craftsmen and whatever who are not getting jobs, it's not necessarily the function maybe of the CIDB. It could be a resultant of the slowing down of economic activity. I'm citing this because I'm looking, if you look at the business news, yesterday it was in Avens, the shares going down, there was, I think weeks ago, I think even Group 5 is not doing well, Basel is not doing well. It could be a result of actually a slowing in economic activity. Not an economist, but I'm just saying that could be a result there. Yeah. So it's not necessarily that maybe it's the registration criteria, but it could be, yes, we acknowledge there's expertise out there, but there's no work for those companies. And the issues, the grading again, I think there's a, in terms of the numbers that register and the demand for those numbers, there's a huge mismatch. There is movement and it doesn't really, I think it's outnumbered by the numbers that come in, hence they distort then our statistics. I would just like a name. I mean, I know that there was a time we never had a black-owned grade 9, women-owned grade 9. We now have, not two, we now have a black-owned grade 9 company. But yes, maybe, yeah, there have been two more white companies that are even foreign-owned that have registered as grade 9. So the statistic might reflect a very slow, what's called growth, but yeah, there is actually some movement in that regard. We're saying slow, yes, we need to try to accelerate that, but there is some progress that we also need to note.
Yeah.
You want to ask a question just before Mr. Naidu answers? Honorable Dreyer and Honorable Putra.
I have a quick follow up, but it was actually to the CEO about the delayed payment by government. Can I ask it now? Yeah, it is a concern, and she also said that they regard it in a very serious light. And then you alluded to the fact that there are disputes between the department and the contractor sometimes, and the government departments are quite eager to run to court quick, and then these disputes are long drawn out, and the smaller companies simply can't afford it. But when you talked about the dissatisfied customers, there were actually not that many. So most people are satisfied with the work. So my question is, the delayed payments, is it as a result, most of them, of disputes? Or, and if it's not mostly because of disputes, okay, there are some disputes, but not, what about all the others? So do you have information, and would you give it to us, regarding giving us a breakdown of departments who are delayed, who are not, you know, up to date with their payments, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, whatever the case may be? We'd appreciate that information.
CEO, Honorable Bhutani.
Thanks for the second bite, Chair.
So follow-up, please.
Follow-up.
Yeah. We are now doing follow-up to the questions that
then.
Yes, that's right, Okay, so the follow, if it's just a follow-up, I will allow. But okay. If it's a second bite of the cherry, I won't allow that.
Okay.
Set the follow-up on the first bite.
Okay, I'll be confirming.
Follow-up, yes, no, in the sense that my two questions have not been addressed.
Okay.
That is the budget allocated to the lower grades vis-a-vis, you know, where their growth. In other words, you've got a contractor that is in grade, between grade 2 and 4. The numbers that you've given us are great, but how big is the budget that they are getting? I don't know if that's something that you would need to go home to work on, maybe learn from that, but forget that I identified it. Hence, I put the question. And the other question that has not been addressed is... Okay, I miss it, Chair. But on the follow-up one, is pertains to transformation, you know, and socio-economic development, which is what you reflected in slide 3. Now, I've heard the response in that regard, dear Chair. But my follow-up question is, have you considered diversifying, suggesting diversifying, because you talk here of the industry, which means that someone who is in the industry as such may be a supplier of building material. That could very well account for something like 30% of the budget. They don't have the expertise to actually be engineers and the like. But they get a big slice of the progress because they supply the materials. That would be creative thinking. Rather than say, okay, you've been brilliant enough to become an engineer, an architect and what have you. Also, you could be saying, let's have so many architects in the project who come from there. If you consider those options, I don't want to talk only about the bricklayer, you know, and so on. If you consider those options, which are very, very critical. Thank you, Chair. Okay, I think we should have allowed Mr. Naidu to answer.
Oh.
Because they were not completely finished with all the answering of questions.
All right.
Not a problem, Professor Fotani.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll try and clean up most of the questions that haven't been addressed. I think delay payments will have a follow-up response. The method of grading, German spoke to some enhancements that have been effected on the registration criteria, such as the professional. But I want to just speak briefly to what he has alluded to say, that the economic circumstances are such that the flow of projects have been reduced drastically. The supply in terms of the number of contractors out there versus the actual projects that are out there is a mismatch. These are all contributing factors that would lead to contractors, especially at the entry levels, raising concern of issues in terms of their having to search into other sectors for work opportunities. There has to be a balance in this. It speaks to Honourable Member's question with regards to what is the rand value of awards at the upper levels versus those at the lower levels. And clearly there is a clustering. I don't have the exact stats with me on hand now on the slide. But yes, huge amounts are going to small number of contractors at the upper level. So huge rand value of projects, and I put it out there to say in excess of 70% of contracts go out to contractors at 7, 8, 9 level. While the maximum number of contractors, about 80% of our contractors, then have to fight for 30% of the work opportunities. Now, what we've said in our messages is that there needs to be a turnaround in the sense that the client departments need to procure differently and start looking at how either subcontracting be entrenched into the procurement methods or how unbundling needs to happen of those big projects to start spreading that sunshine. And hopefully that's the response, and the stats are available in other monitors that we have. Also, with regard to the grading criteria, we have to be cautious as a CIDP. Over a number of years, there's been increased calls to say the criteria are inhibiting to contractors to register. So we've decreased the bar in terms of the requirements to register, made it slightly easier for contractors to register. But in doing so, we start to perhaps erode away the integrity of the registers, remembering that the registers are used by the client departments or the officials as a risk management tool. So when they award contracts, they use it as a tool to ensure that those contractors have a certain standing and level, so the quality of the work, the performance, etc., the delivery on time is all at a certain level. And if we keep dropping the bar in terms of the quality and the performance and the criteria that we require, there might just come a point where client departments actually say to us as a CIDB and as a government, the weight of your registering criteria is not strong enough to give us that risk management tool that is required, and we need to be cautious of that in terms of analyzing the industry and how we revise the criteria. That being said, we are still in the process even now of looking at enhanced criteria that can shift on, even at the grade 1 level. We realize the contractors have said we're not getting work opportunities at grade 1. It's so easy to walk into a CIDB office, get a contract for registration. There's 100,000 contractors on our database at grade 1 level. And so part of our future would be, let's shift those contractors to say, who have got track record? Who've got some exposure in this? Who's, as an artisan, has got some previous training in the industry? And if though, and then we can quantify who they are and then say what interventions are required for those who don't have, to bring them up to a certain minimum requirement or level, and for those that are there already to be able to get work opportunities. But even client departments now, public works and the like, are not awarding contracts at the grade 1 level. If they put out a tender, they'll just be flooded with an influx of hopefuls, seekers, mixed up with those who actually have some artisan skills or actually have been in the industry for a number of years. And so those artisans that have been registered with as master builders and the like are now saying, we're in the same pool competing with this whole host of, and private departments are not even putting work out at grade 1. So we need to know that some of the challenges that we face in there as well. One of the questions is also in terms of MISA. MISA is the Municipal Support Agency, Municipal Infrastructure Support Agency, set up within COCTA. It's the old DBSA Sabenza Manje program that was there to give specific support to municipalities that were in distress from water sector and various other specific sectors. So there were retired engineers that were brought in to offer certain levels of support. And so now under MISA, those structures, there's about 100 of these engineering technical capacity support that is available to certain municipalities. And Mr. Gwadan, through COCTA, in terms of the Back to Basics program, has now put out a process to say they will target the low-capacity municipalities, those who don't have project managers in their employ, those who don't have SCM officials, and they will deploy these professional retired engineers that are on the payroll of MISA to give them support. So we at CIDB have now interfaced and interacted with the MISA officials to say, here's the procurement methodologies, here's the CIDB's prescript, here's the National Contractor Development Program. Please ensure that at the municipal level, even though they aren't capacity, when you appoint new staff in there, their role is to transfer knowledge. So to appoint new individuals, young engineers and the like, train them, and then to move away and let them continue. And so in doing so, they will now start entrenching the CIDB contractor development and other CIDB three scripts, registers, etc., and transfer that knowledge. And so we've offered this extended support, capacitation, and training of those resources, and targeted training sessions within districts and low-capacity municipalities. So that's the initiative I think Honourable Member asked about, or asking more about MISA. The rate of contractor graduation out of programs, etc., I said we learned lessons in previous programs that contractors sat there sometimes for a number of years, or they actually, some contractors came in at grade 2 level and didn't leave at a grade 7 level. So the question was, how many contractors have moved from grade 1 to 5? We've got the movements in terms of upgrades. I've spoken a lot about move 1 grade. We can tell you how many contractors have moved 1 grade, 2 grade, 4 grade, 7 grades, etc. We can also show you that the rate of graduation is now guided by a guideline, which we say contractors must be in a program for a maximum period of either 3 years, or once they reach the grade 6 level, must be graduated out of the program. So we've put those as pegs down to say those are some thresholds, because after that you've been in the program too long, either you've succeeded or you haven't succeeded. Like in university, either you exited from a program because your lecturer hasn't been able to give you the support and you haven't played the game in terms of studying, the same way with an incubator. there comes a point where you'll have to be either exited from the program or you'll be graduated out of the program. And those are the two time frames, as well as grading level that we've attributed in terms of the rate of graduation and rate of incubator programs. The issue of JVs, in terms of all of our procurement methodologies, we've given options. Our acting CEO has mentioned the various procurement methodologies that we pay to clients. Clients must go out there and look at their project bundle or project for the budget for the year and say, which of these projects can be developmental? And in the family of public works, they may say, okay, maintenance projects are ripe for contract development. It's quite easy to allocate it. We can allocate 30% of our capital projects maybe to contract development, and that's the target that they would then set, and they would measure themselves against those. They would also decide, okay, let's use a term contract here, or let's use a subcontracting initiative here, or let's use a JV here. So yes, there's been some lessons to learn that sometimes JVs, they force partnerships and they haven't been necessarily shown to work. And in other instances, they actually do work, where there's more oversight, management, a mentor might be in place to assist in such an arrangement. So there's some resource intensivities that are placed on the client department where they have to employ some professionals or mentor to give additional support to such methodologies. But we're saying here that the process that must be followed is at the hands of the client department. As CIDP, we've given them the suite of options, the portfolio to say, this is what you must consider, and the client departments would then decide how they and which one they would actually have uptake on. Thanks, Chair. I think I'm sorry to talk about.
Okay, just one, I think it was the issue of what is the source of this challenge on SEM and uptake of best practices. I would just deduce from the responses from the CIDP, one of the actions that we said we need to undertake to address this challenge is client capacitation. I think in that we make an assumption that mainly clients are risk averse. If you say take on black contractors, let me put it that way, black contractors will be perceived as high risk. But then if you show them and capacitate them on ways of managing their risk and also turning up on their registers and promoting their risk, their use of their register as a risk management tool, there's been some improvement in that regard. So, but besides also being risk averse, there's also the issue of the primacy of your development vis-a-vis empowerment. So main clients department's main role here is to build that bridge, not empowerment issues. So we have developed also guidelines that seek to promote what's called balancing the agencies of delivery and the agencies of empowerment. So yeah, there has been a lot of activity that regards to one to alleviate those kind of fears in terms of engaging small or black contractors or small businesses, but also in terms of promoting strategies that would enable empowerment whilst at the same time facilitating delivery. So yeah, that's nice.
I want to give a 10-minute break for tea and for some refresh or some people that want to relieve themselves as such.
Less than 30% of invoices in 2011 from the
fact that we're now going to clients and almost begging them to register on this very important registry is not on. And we don't want to use a stick approach. You know, we don't want to go to them and say, we're now going to send you to the AG. That's not the intention. The intention is for them to understand the value chain, to say, I award a contract, I handle the site. Immediately the next stop is to get onto the CIDB website and register this contract. So we can immediately pick up the movement on the register to see if does that contract, has it performed, has it been paid within time. All of that information is supposed to be registered with our we don't have the information. We have, for example, the National Department of Public Works that reports, you know, on these things on a monthly basis. We can probably collate information for the National Department and provide that to you. It will give you a good indicator. Because we also, the entire public works family is being monitored on their payment responsibilities and expenses from our ministry. So we can provide you probably with what we are doing as the public works family in that regard. So I will undertake to provide a report to you on that matter. And just lastly, Chair, on the issue of the suppliers in the industry, I think that's a phenomenal one. And the CIDB Act actually provides for us to register suppliers. We're struggling with the register of contractors, but it's there. We're struggling with the register of projects, but it's there. We are moving into the space of the register for professional service providers. The suppliers is on the radar. We just haven't touched it yet. But the reason for that is, and I might want to, you know, ask my public works counterpart to help me here. Government doesn't buy very clean materials. We use prime contracting model, which is, you know, we decide to go to prison, for example. We get our professional teams, they do the design and whatever, and then we put it out for the appointment of a contractor to the tender process. That contractor has all responsibility, you know, to buy the material, to do everything for the delivery of that particular service, as an example. So, you know, maybe my transport here can help me, because that's the delivery model that we adopt with government. So, if we want to target suppliers, because the only way we can track it now is through the scorecard to understand, you know, who's a black supplier and who you're buying from. But it's a long value chain, and it's going to be quite administratively intensive to understand the, you know, where they're going to. So I think as work in progress, we can look at the issue of bringing up the requirements for registered suppliers. But right now we're just trying to make do with what we have. And you know, put these developments of new registers, you know, on the radar screen for future implementation. Thank you, Jim.
Members, any more questions from your side? Second back now, Honourable Mateve. I think if a member or anyone here wants to grab a cup of tea, wipe these cups out, grab your cup of tea, come back, enjoy it, so that we don't have a break. Honourable Mateve.
No, it's not the I'm sorry.
Sorry, Honourable Vatere, we said quietly, Mr. Chairman, we said quietly, Honourable Mateve.
Yeah, one of my questions.
Honourable Mateve, Chief, Sibeko, don't let the people come late and make a noise in the meeting. Please. Thank you.
Yeah, one of my questions which I'm not answered with is question of the criteria they're using in terms of trading. I'm not yet answered. I'm not quite comfortable with that. I just want to know the criteria using in terms of trading.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Of course, Chairman had actually attempted to answer that, but the criteria that we had used to grade contractors is actually based on two pillars. One is your access to capital, you know, how liquid are you, and the other is your track record. So the track record is, and we don't limit it to public sector projects that you could have finished. So we've got a threshold that we need to, and looking they're not getting something good. And you know, this is a big problem. You know, public sector, there's a value chain, there's a pipeline that sometimes gets stuck and projects don't go through. And if you look at the program that's coming through from National Change, the IDMS, Infrastructure Development Management System, it's all about a methodology to set your project in motion. They talk about a planning cycle, a project management cycle, and a maintenance and facilities management cycle. And we try to get all infrastructure departments onto that methodology so that they can start planning and get their project through that cycle. But that's actually the challenge that we're facing right now with contracting.
Yeah, follow up on this criteria. I'm just stuck because what, as an amazing contractor and also as a black, you know, people, a black woman, the access to the funds is so difficult. That's why I said, you said the criteria depend whether you have resources or not. So it's so difficult for us. So probably you are crippling us not to go anyway in terms of construction.
Okay,
there's a table up on the screen, and let's just look at, for example, grade 6. Notice that 25% of section rule, your available capital in the bank is 1.3 million, and you can only qualify for grade 6 grade if you completed a project of 3 million. Now, the available capital of 1.3 is an indicator of how well you can conduct your business. Because as a grade 6, because you're a viable business, you know, you probably have staff, you have overhead, you have offices. And I think, you know, we as a CIDB need to look into the issue of available capital, because it is a problem. We do understand it. It's a challenge right across the place of contracting. And look at how better, because it's all about risk sharing here. The banks and their ability to actually take on these contractors, you know, they cover their risk first, which is why the contractors are engaged and something of the whole issue. Now, those figures there are the latest ones, the ones that we just revised. So we're looking at all possible options that we can do to put contractors in that regard, and we'll continue to do that.
So, Chair, let me just add on.
Now, I wanted to say yes, and with the latest amendments, we've also actually made the provision that I think is up to grade 4, it's either or. It's not both your under turnover and your available capital. There's one of the considerations to ease what is called movement of contractors there. I'm saying that the regulations are even much tighter than this. So we've been gradually making those provisions.
Okay. Members? You've exhausted all your questions, Honorable Bhutani?
If I may, can I just slot in a comment?
Yeah.
Okay. this is a friendly comment, an invitation for us to up the game. I wish and hope that we really understand that so much transformation is expected in the health industry nowadays, that there's more responsibility perhaps than you comprehend that rests on you. There are so many hopefuls, jobs are scarce out there, and construction is regarded by a whole lot of less educated people as their primary source of income, just like the transport industry, you know, the taxi guys. And let's come up with a comprehensive development programs, you know, to enable these people to get onto it. This issue that I touched on of unbundling those big contractors, I want to appeal to your institution to prioritize that, because that's about the
only way we will enable our people, grade one, grade two, to be able to have, you know, an opportunity to participate, you know. It's unbundle all the big contracts and say 100,000 must go to that job and so on and so on, and then recreate, you know, where the contract such that those people can be accommodated. Otherwise, big boys will always have it their way all the way through. We know there are problems in the steel industry. Let's look at creative ways of making sure that the, you know, the built industry continues to grow. Thanks a lot, Chair.
Honourable Fatane, Honourable Masela, nothing. Okay, Honourable Daya, Honourable Olders, nothing. Okay, now can I shock my nine? Don't worry, gentlemen, it's not. Now, it's just the impact on the lowering of liquidity. What does it have on the emerging contractors to complete the project? That's the one. And tell me the banks. What attempts have you make to approach the banks to make capital available for the emerging contractors? As such, have you tried to be the middleman, a negotiator? That part, but also with our governmental DFIs, development financial institutions like your land bank, your NEF, IDC, and the last one, did you try and partner up with the banks? You know, because I know the banks, a meeting we had with all. Previous parliament we had with the banking council, they were like very choosy in who they assist, and the regulations in terms, or not the regulations, but their rules, they've tightened their rules and they've tightened the screws so much that, I mean, you're even battling to get a home loan or a car loan from the bank, you know, so I would assume or anticipate that you would have also had some problems in partnering up with some banks, and to say, because the built environment, the bank does not want to get into specifically when you are between 1 and 4. You don't want to get involved much in that regard, because speaking to a banker the other day, in terms of how can they provide assistance for the grade ones up to threes, because I didn't have the flight because of the force. And he said to me, it's a risky situation. For argument's sake, if we take a suburb like Kerala Park, I don't know how well you know Cape Town, or let's say Esterus in Pretoria, or Eldorado Park in Johannesburg. You want to go and build there. You're a contractor. You go to the bank, it says, I've got 20 houses that I can build. They first want you, or they first want, if you're a subcontractor, they first want from the main contractor a guarantee letter to say you are guaranteed this amount so that we can give you that amount. So, do you think you can be the intervention person there to assist these guys, assist these small guys as such? And my other question is, I know that there's about, as Mr. Naidu said, probably 100,000 contractors more. But do you do random checks or oversight? Because you can't go and just grade a person and don't do an oversight of that person. You know, it's because you play an important role, because if you grade a person, grade 8, he gets a contract, but then his workmanship deteriorated so bad that you go down back and say, no, but this person should have been graded a grade 2 contract, not a grade 8.
that type of thing. Do you do random checks, spot checks, randomly on the grading of those that you grade? I think that's the end of my night. See you.
Far back as the inception of the National Contract Development Program, we considered what are the key success elements of contract development, and we could probably capture it in three areas. One is the access to continuous work opportunities, the other is mentoring and training support, and the third is broadly under just the heading of finance, whether it be access to finance, working capital, insurance, performance guarantees. Those are all bundled under the issue of finance. And so in terms of each of these, CRDB said, besides coming up with a policy, let's act as the middleman, as you suggested, Chair, and let's see if we can bring together the parties. Because although we've come up with a framework, we say, let's bring public works closer to the banks. And so we met with the Banking Council, Banking Association, CEO Casco Vadia many years ago, and we pitched the requirements of government and contractor development, enterprise development, transformation, and he welcomed it, and he said he will facilitate the interaction with the CIDB with the various big four banks. And he set those sessions up for us, and we signed partnered MOA agreements as government, being the CIDB, together with each of the four banks. So all big four banks signed MOAs with the CIDB in terms of being open to, and it's not necessarily saying, yes, we will endorse all your contractors, we'll accept them, we'll extend finance or anything. It was very broad in terms of collaborative agreements to be more willing to engage with contractors, which were previously, they were very risk averse and they weren't willing to even look at contractors, they saw it as high risk, etc. And so they said, yes, you are a government entity, you are a leader in the construction industry, you are grading and doing risk management, let's share and let's engage. So we've since then been interacting with all four banks. We've worked closely because of our relationship with Public Works on the EPWP program. Previously, APSA was the primary finance provider to EPWP contractors, and there was a partner relationship, and APSA was geared towards construction. So that was a ripe and ready agreement. Nedbank has been the most recent EPWP banker for Public Works, so they geared themselves up. Standard Bank and ourselves ran various training modules and support to emerging contractors. F&E and ourselves assisted in putting up various processes together with MassMart and others. So there have been initiatives with the big four banks. They are still risk averse at the end of the day. They would want to do their own due diligence checks on contractors. In instances where development programs are being set up, we facilitate the link with all four banks, with the client department to see which would be the preferred and then to involve in the procurement process. We've then also interacted with a whole host of development finances, most recently with the setup of CIFA. Germans had extensive interactions and support. We've also conducted in the industry an analysis of the various financing models, looking at whether we do set up a government separate bank on construction finance and the likes, but you know, we reverted back to the DBSA model and the CIFA support, etc. So there have been a whole host of engagements. The CIB continues to offer support when it comes to finance. Obviously, we'd have to do more in terms of a facilitatory role. We can't really prescribe to anyone, but it seems project financing at the moment is the way that each of the banks look at it on an individual basis and an individual contractor. So hopefully, that's just an issue of our initiatives on finance.
Yeah, and just like a small addition, I think my program managers covered our main interventions with the bank. But I also wanted to mention that there's a correlation between the bank's risk averse and also some of their, should I say, not so good practices by the client. The issues of delayed payment again. The client, some of the banks are saying, here we are, we have provided finance to the contractors as we have committed ourselves to. But the problem now is they cannot save their loans because they are not being paid on time. Or we end up having to service high interest because of them not paying on time. There's the issue also of awarding contracts to, let's call it what, unprofitable contracts, where clients would award a contract because it's the lowest price. But when they know that guy is not going to deliver. So the issues of performance, you know, some of those contracts are not performing. So those are some of the issues that sort of like reverse the gains that we've made with the bank. While the banks are willing, but now with this kind of, and in this kind of environment, the banks, some of them are reconsidering actually the construction market. The case in hand here would be IDC 2010. They actually they've stopped financing construction projects. Locally, they're considering maybe there's a system, those that want to do business offshore, but locally they want to stop because of the environment in which contractors operate. On the liquidity issue, I accept, maybe Chairperson, we need to collate statistical evidence of the impact thereon, because at the moment it would be more like anecdotal. There has been, I know that the changes in consultation with the contractors, it was a welcome, really, amendment. They welcomed the amendment that we have effected those changes, but I think what we need is statistical evidence to demonstrate the impact thereon.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me just have the last bite. I don't know whether maybe I missed it, the issue of skills development. For the construction company, I'm sure to progress well or to be successful, there should be relevant skills within it, relevant professionals within it. Are we having enough out there who are able to run this company? If we don't have, are we having any intervention to that effect? Maybe we can get put us through on that one.
Well, Putani, you look like you want to say something? Skills development. Thank you, sir. I would hope that the mandates of the department officials right here is not for them just to sit and listen, but rather they would be ready to take a question if I put it to them. And there's been a mention here by Mr. Naidoo that not even Public Works unbundles, you know, a big, large contracts. Why are you not doing that to Public Works? Because say that these hands are tied up because you haven't gone that far. We would like to know this committee why you haven't done so, because there are many people who cannot be in grade 8 or 9 and they are qualified to do some work. Thank you.
Thanks,
after, after you, the department.
Just on the issue of even public work is not. What I actually said was that in some instances projects can be unbundled, in others they can't. So I gave the example of Eskom with Pusile. There will be portions of it that could be and some can't. I said that in the family of public works, even the SCM policy has incorporated all of the options of unbundling term contracts. And at varying levels, they are introducing those. There are obviously challenges when it comes to certain methods, like maybe in subcontracting or JV arrangements, etc. But actually, in the family of public works, I say we are the leader and champion in terms of the SCM policy fully aligning with the NCDP, and at varying levels, them actually rolling up. But I'll leave them to actually also respond on what levels of, I know the number of term contracts that got our subcontracting opportunity, so my colleagues from public works can speak to that specifically. On the issue of skills, as a CIDB, we can play a role in terms of, we can introduce performance assessment of contractors to be able to pick up from clients as they roll out their project, what's been the issues from a skills gap perspective, a recognition of their prior skills, and give them some level of accreditation going into the future, but our registers allow for that, and there is a lodging of that on our system. Once the skills gaps are identified, we can then talk to certain standards which would be deemed to be appropriate for the industry, and then look at focused training at those levels. So we'll then promote to the client departments that if you are running a development program and if you have mentors in place and a training budget, here's where this contractor is benchmarked at the moment, here's the skills standards, that's the gap, and they need an NQF 4, 5, whatever it might be. And that's part of the skills development strategy as a CIDB that we have in-house. And it talks to the skills standards, the recognition of prior learning, the contractor recognition scheme and process, and the ability to train in terms of those gap areas. So that's some of the initiatives that we're driving as the CIDB. As funding becomes more readily available to us as well, we work, and we haven't spoken much about our constrained environment in terms of lack of resources to run an inspectorate. You know, we need a little mini army in each of the provinces to be able to go out and check on each contractor and check. Remember, we've got something like 140,000 contractors on our database and a whole host of projects that are being implemented at any point in time. And in that regard, then, to run an inspectorate or to actually do skills audits on every single contractor would require a huge budget and a huge personnel. So we do it on a sampling basis for now, and we're hoping that with some introduction of additional revenue processes that we've got in the pipeline that our Act allows for, as that revenue becomes generated, we can start stepping up in terms of an increase in inspectors, increased personnel, increased audits, etc. And that's in the pipeline in terms of the skills strategy as well, how they would ramp up in time to come with regard to offering direct training, offering direct support, offering recognition of prior learning, etc. Thanks.
The Department of Public Works.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Indeed, our mandate was to provide support to CIDB, but to also note issues that need the attention of the department, and we have done so. We will be able to provide further details in terms of how the department would treat such issues or how the department is faring with regards to that. One of those is the issue of late payment. The statistics that were given, a departure point which was utilized was the year 2011. We can certainly indicate that there's been a lot of improvement since then, between then and now, and we can provide those statistics. as at the last month in terms of our average payment within the 30 days period. We can provide that as a
difference. Sorry,
quickly, just to interrupt. Can we ask that in the office to make that available? Yeah. Can we formally ask them that they make it available to the local?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Can just raise with the secretary and the issue. Our secretary will
raise this
message
to
all the members.
Okay. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. We will do so. The other issue is the issue of unbundling. It is happening, but it's happening per project, depending on the design. Specifications per project. The issue that we also wanted to indicate is that the process that CIDB has alluded to of policy review, the development of the Public Works Act and the reinforcement of the CIDB Act also gives us an opportunity to develop norms and standards for the public works family. For instance, the issue that was raised about a percentage of contracts on supply. It is happening, but it's not a norm or standard in the public works family, and that's the direction that we are moving towards. The encouragement for, or also including in our contracts, that a percentage of contracting should be local on specific projects. That is what we are doing. It goes in tandem with the requirements for the employment of local labor. But we are saying that as we conclude the process of the Public Works Act, we will then develop norms and standards that would go with the Act to make it a point that these are shared norms and standards for the public works family and the industry.
The process of developing a statute to the stage where it gets signed by the state president is quite long. In the absence of a statute that prohibits the acceleration and implementation of these transformation steps, what are you going to do? Because we're 21 years into democracy, and you're telling us today that you still want to process a piece of legislation to enable you to transform a starving South Africa. What, how can you accelerate this? This is extremely frustrating, sir. Their hands are tied up. They are only an entity of the department. And the department here, not even the DGs here, not even the minister here, and you're talking a major item that affects the South African society. Middle managers are sent to answer on such a strategically important issue. And all he can do from his level is to tell us that, yeah, we're looking into this. This is painful. Millions of South Africans rely and depend on you. And you're taking the snail's pace to do it. Give us a date by which you will be able to come back to this committee and tell us what you're doing about it to accelerate it. Check through your statutes. If there's anything, because I'm saying that this is what contractors will tell us, but it's not the law. I know what you're talking about. They'll tell you that I'm not forced by law to have black people, you know, in my team. But that's why I want to know, can you test that? What stops you from doing it? Put it as a test case. We can't be laid off just because we're getting our salaries on the 15th. People can't put food on their table. Students in universities go to prostitution. Prostitutes. Because their parents can't put food on their tables. The situation is scary outside there. Thank you, sir. No, thank you, Honorable Dan. I think it's part of the prerogative of the committee. That's why we need to find out where is the blockages, where is the stumbling blocks, so that we can also act upon them. And I think it's we'll have to call the DG and the minister, because they are the people that can give the answers. But I also want you from the department side to take it back to them, to say that the committee has raised the concern that the Honourable Fultani has raised. Because at the end of the day, and the meeting that I had was part of my constituents, which Mr. Muhammad was present, it was not Public Works that were blamed, it was CIDB. And people clearly say that CIDB are the culprits, CIDB does not register them, CIDB does. It was even talked of payments that came for, because of them not registering. And in some instances, it was also type of CIDB has not transformed, and it's white companies that got it. And I made it my task to go and talk to also to some of these white elders. And they share the same frustration. So it's not just the frustration that black-owned companies are sharing. It's or experiencing, that it's a frustration that it's going across the board. So I think we have heard the cries of CIDB, and where possible, we as the portfolio committee need to raise this sharply with the principals to say that we can't have 21 years into democracy, as Honorable Fultani said. So Public Works will still come up with statutes and all that, laws and those type of things. I know you can't give the answers, or maybe you can give the answers to certain things, but I don't want to prolong the debate as well. So, sir, if you've got the answers, give us the answers, otherwise we must get the principals to come and give the answers.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I indicated that we can be able to provide the Commission's details on the work that we are doing as Public Works in the development of contractor. In alluding to the statute, I'm relating to policy limitations that CIDB has referred to. And I indicated that we are reinforcing the CIDB Act, and we are also in a process to put in place the Public Works Act. There is work that is being done by the Department of Public Works National. There is work that is being done in provinces. We collate that work and the information through a meeting of the minister and MECs, which is MIME. So we can be able to come to the committee to provide even statistics on the work that we have done. The issue that I was raising of policy formulation and the Act will help us to deal with the impediments that are there, to make things not to be on the basis of choice, to make things to be mandatory. That's the point that I was raising. And I would like to apologize if it has created a bit of heat. But that's what we're basically saying. In that 21 years of experience that we've had, we've left things to be of choice. Now, we have learned that we need to make them mandatory for us to be able to make the point that we upscale transformation. We don't leave it to foreign. Thank you, Chairperson.
Tanya, I see you are smiling now, so good. All right. You see, we can even find people without having a red wine or a beer. Let me take this opportunity of thanking the honourable members and also CIDB and the CEO and the leadership of yourself, man, and your colleagues, who has really done us good and did their task very well. And that's why we have to push for this acting role to be scrapped. Really full time. And you can listen. You're supporting that.
You are
good. Also to the department, thank you very much for your assistance and guidance also. And remember that our work doesn't stop here today. We still need a lot of engagement to go. And we will still call on CIDB, we'll still do our job that we are tasked to do here, doing our oversight over you. we'll continue that for the next 5 years while we are here. Or if we are not being redeployed by our respective political parties, we will continue doing that. But also to the staff, thank you very much for your assistance and work. Mr. Muhammad, you're happy now today that
I think this is a starting point. There's a lot of things, challenges out there, but certainly we'll engage.
Okay.
Keep on engaging. Thank you.
All right. And if they give you trouble, you know where to knock.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, members and department CIDB. We want to wish you well in your endeavors, Mr. Naivishi. Oh, I didn't get your name. You were, you said? Mrs. Tambira. And your surname in German is, I'll just say Mr. German. thank you very much. Malaslela. Malaslela. Okay. Thank you very much. This meeting stands adjourned. Go well. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.